The spiritual realm is real. I know firsthand. Hi, I'm Shelley, and welcome to Tin Hat Talks, Question the Narratives with Donita and Shelley. And I'm going to share some personal experiences that I have had in my lifetime. Now, let me point out, first of all, that I am a born-again believer now. I did not, however, grow up in a Christian home. I did grow up in a home where we went to church sometimes as a tradition on Christmas Eve and Easter, and I was sent to confirmation classes. But other than that, faith was never something that we were expected to actually carry with us in our hearts. It was something that was just a routine, just a tradition. So because of that, I grew up with a very, I don't want to say liberal lifestyle, because I would say that my parents, especially my mother, were a bit conservative, but I was allowed to do a lot of things that I would not allow my children to do now. And I think that that does provide the backdrop with what I'm going to share with you today. Now, let me also tell you that the reason that I am sharing this with you is because, unfortunately, there are a lot of topics in the world that Christians do not want to address. Sometimes it's because it makes them uncomfortable. Some of these topics scare them. Some of them confuse them. And so what do we do when things scare us or confuse us or make us uncomfortable? Well, unfortunately, some of us, and this includes those people in the secular world, tend to shy away from them, pretend that certain things don't exist, or laugh them off and claim that they are ridiculous nonsense simply because it's easier than dealing with them one-on-one. And that is really what I am going to talk about today, is my experience with what some people might refer to as the paranormal, those things in the spiritual realm that so many Christians, unfortunately, tend to pretend doesn't exist. So, in the beginning, I'm just kidding, I'm not going to start from my birth or anything, but as a child, I was always really interested in the spiritual realm, not even just the spiritual realm. I was interested in lots of what most people would call weird stuff. I was interested in Bigfoot and in the Loch Ness Monster and in UFOs and alien abductions. And yes, I was very, very interested in ghosts. So my parents actually had no problem with that. And in fact, they used to buy me books on ghosts all the time. And my best friend too, she went to the same church that I did growing up, and her parents would buy her ghost books, and we would actually go ghost hunting. One of us, I don't remember which of us, got a ghost hunting book. And so we used to have ghost hunts in our houses because we were convinced that they were haunted because both of our houses were built in the 1800s. So we would get the little tape recorder and we would press record and we would leave the room and see if we picked up voices. And you know, one time we did pick up a voice, but both of us were pretty sure that it was her older sister playing tricks on us. But again, it wasn't something that our parents told us not to do. They were completely fine with it. So fine, in fact, that my parents, I believe it was in high school, but it may have been in middle school, actually bought me a Ouija board. And I looked at it as a game. I didn't understand what the repercussions were for using a Ouija board. I didn't even realize the dark history that these Ouija boards have and the danger that they posed. I just looked at it as something fun to do with my friends. So we would pull out my Ouija board from time to time and we would ask questions and it would move around. And I'm fairly certain that it was one of us moving it around and we would laugh and we would have a good time. But looking back on it, I do wonder if it was that Ouija board that may have opened the door, opened the gate to some of the things that occurred to me later on in my life. Now, I have to say that I have grown up having what some might call a very strong intuition. for some reason, I am able to really get a good read on things. And I don't want to call myself a psychic because I know that that is completely unbiblical and I'm not even close to being something like that. But every once in a while, I will get very, very strong feelings. And then what I say does end up happening. And it's to the point where my husband tells me all the time not to say something that he doesn't want to happen because he says that when I say things, they happen. And again, it's not something that I can turn on and off and do voluntarily. It only happens every once in a while. It's not something that happens often. And it's not something that I can try to do. I think if I would try to do it, I would fail miserably. So I'm not, you know, bragging about this. It's just, you know, something that does happen. And so this might be part of the reason why I have been able to sense the entities that I have experienced that maybe other people have not been able to. Another thing that I have dealt with in my life is every once in a while, again, this is purely accidental, not something that I ever try to do, is I'm going to call it thought transference just because I don't have another term to call it. So thought transference might not even be accurate, but it's the best that I can come up with. But it is basically where I will be thinking something and the person that is with me, usually my husband, will say the exact thing that I was thinking. Now, I will say, I know that very often husbands and wives and sometimes other family members do have some sort of bond where they will say, hey, you just said exactly what I was thinking. And I know that that is something that is completely normal. And I'm not talking about the more common things like that. I am speaking about when we might just be going for a car ride and I will just think of the most off the wall thing that my husband would never in a million years be thinking of on his own. And he will suddenly say the exact same thing that I was thinking. So I'm talking about it on that level, things that would not naturally be coming out of his mouth or that he would be thinking of, but that I would be thinking of. And then he would say it, if that makes any sense. This also happened with my oldest son when he was about 4. And thinking back on this, I've realized that many things seem to happen to my children when they're around 4 years old. I don't know if it has any significance, but as I look back on these memories, I'm starting to see a pattern where it's when they are around 4 years old. My son and I were at a playground and I was sitting on a bench and he was across the playground playing on a piece of equipment and he was far enough away that if I would speak, he would not hear me. I would have had to yell in order for him to hear what I was saying. I was watching him climb on one of these climbing things and I remember thinking to myself, oh, Brendan, be careful. And right after I thought that, my son yelled over to me, Mommy, who said that? And I said what? And he said that he heard someone say, be careful to him. So it's not something that only happened with my husband. It did happen with my son. And in fact, it did happen with my children a couple of other times. But those are the most notable times. And I think you get my drift on what I am speaking of. So fast forward, though, a few years when I was actually working as a cleaning supervisor at the electric company in the city where I used to live. I used to have to inspect the floors of the buildings that the cleaners would clean at the night when the office people were not working anymore. So I would have to go around the floors and make sure that, you know, the trash was emptied and the floor was vacuumed and everything was dusted and looking nice. And I would just go around through the floors, turning the lights off as I went along because all the lights had to be off on every floor every night. There was one particular floor that really put me on edge. It gave me the willies, so to speak. I always felt the hair on the back of my neck going up whenever I was on this particular floor. And it wasn't just me. the cleaners would also, the janitors, they would also tell me that they did not like this floor. There was something about this floor that didn't sit right with them, and none of them really liked to be on it. But I still had to do it. It was part of my job. And the one night, as I was doing this inspection, the floor was being renovated. And I've heard people say that for some reason, renovations can sometimes set things in motion. I don't know if that's why it became more tangible at this time or not, but the floor was being renovated. And so when I was inspecting the floor, everything was pretty empty. It was just empty desks, empty bookshelves, not much around, maybe the occasional binder here and there or some file folders, just stuff like that, but really nothing around. Yet when I was walking through the one aisle, I felt something whoosh past the back of my head. I actually felt the air move my hair and something slammed on the floor behind me. I turned around and looked, and there was a heavy three-ring binder with papers in it lying on the floor behind me. Something had caused a binder that I didn't even see anywhere. And in fact, there was nowhere around me that was high enough that it would have been able to fall and whoosh past my head. In that aisle, it was everything. It was just desks. So when that happened to me, I was confused. And since I was already afraid of that floor, it had me a little worried. But again, I had to keep doing this job. A few weeks later, I was inspecting the floor again, and I got to the back of the floor, turned the lights off in that part of the floor on the back wall, and those light switches turned off all of the lights in the back half of the floor. So after I did that, it was pretty dark in the back half, and as I was rounding a corner, I heard footsteps, and I walked around the corner, and I saw tall, dark shadow of a man walking towards me. At first, I didn't process what it was at first, and I thought it was a security guard because the security guards used to make their rounds at night too. So at first, I just kind of jumped and I said, "Oh my gosh, you scared me." And as soon as I said that, it was gone. There was no one there on the floor with me. Again, it didn't hit me at first. What happened? So I continued walking through the aisles. And then all of a sudden, when I realized what had happened, I took off and darted for the front of the floor. I didn't even bother inspecting anymore. I don't even think that I turned off the rest of the lights. I just wanted to get out of there. I went downstairs to where our office was, and my mom was actually my boss. And I told her what happened. And she said to me, "Were you on N5? And that was the name of the floor that I was on. And I said to her, "How did you know?" And she said to me that years before she had been on that floor and she saw a dark blur go whooshing past her. And I said to her, "Why didn't you tell me this before?" And she said, "Because I didn't want to scare you. I didn't want to make you afraid to go up there." Well, needless to say, I was then afraid to go up there, and I would not inspect that floor by myself anymore. I don't know if I ever inspected that floor by myself ever again. And if I did, I'm fairly certain that I did not ever turn all the lights off on that floor anymore. Now, the news actually got around rather quickly about what had happened. The security guards heard about it because I used to chat with them. And then they would tell the employees of the electric company. So then the news went around with them. So everyone was hearing about it and asking me about it. And one of the security guards did tell me that he asked around, and from what he could tell, there had been no deaths in that building. And at that point in time, I was not a believer. So I would have instantly thought of a shadow like that as being the ghost of a dead person. And now as a believer, I know that that is not what ghosts are. They are not the spirits of dead people. And I will get to that at the end of this podcast episode. But for now, let me just say that it didn't appease me at all. knowing that no one had died up there because I knew what I saw. But a few years later, I was no longer working there. My husband and I were expecting our fifth child, and we moved into a house that we were really excited to move into. I will say, though, that it kind of gave me the same feeling that that floor in the electric building gave to me. I tried to ignore it because we had been living in an apartment with four children and were expecting our fifth. I was happy to finally get into a house, and I didn't want anything to mess that up. So we just continued on and moved in there. I also have to point out, and I think this is very important, is that it was around this time that I actively started seeking the Lord. I was diligently reading everything that I could about the Bible. I was also trying to read the Bible on my own, and it's not something that was encouraged in the church that I had grown up at. The church that I grew up at, they would just type up whatever passages they were going to read on a bulletin, and we were expected to read it from there. And we were never encouraged to read our Bibles on our own. And in fact, whenever I would have questions about the Bible, they would kind of shrug me off because they just made me feel like they didn't think that I should be reading the Bible. But I was. And I was watching every documentary on the Bible that I could, all the books I could get my hand on. So just suffice it to say that I was really trying to find out who God was and what his plan was for me and what exactly I needed to do to have a relationship with him. I was just at that point where I was learning all of this when I moved into this house. So I'm wondering if maybe I was being tormented a little more in the house because of that. I'm not sure. But beyond the weird feeling, things quickly escalated. We were only there about, I'd say, 6 weeks. When things started to happen, we would be gone, we would come home, and the radio would be on, and we hadn't had it on when we left earlier in the day. Our burglar alarm also used to go off all the time, too. I think it happened at least 3 times, and it got to the point where we were told that if the burglar alarm kept going off, that we were going to get fined for it, because there was never anything that could have tripped it. So we actually stopped using the burglar alarm for that reason. Then we were coming home from a party one night. It was a Christmas party. And I remember that my daughter, my oldest daughter, who she was about 4 at the time, we walked into the house and she said to me, and this reminds me of what happened with my son in the playground. She said to me, "Mommy, who said that?" And I said to her, "Said what?" And she said that she heard someone say, "Welcome back," when we got in the house. A few weeks later, my 2-year-old was sleeping. Well, I put her down for her nap in her crib. Her bedroom was on the 3rd floor, and she shared it with her older sister, who by this point was in school. And this was before we started homeschooling. So all of my children were in school and I was just home with my 2-year-old and pregnant with number 5. After being up there for a little while, she started to cry, as children do, started to fuss a little bit. So I went upstairs to check on her and immediately noticed that the dollhouse that had been in the middle of her floor when I put her in her crib was now in the crib with her. This wasn't something that she would have been able to reach from her crib. She wouldn't have even been able to lift it up in order to put it in the crib with herself. And she certainly wouldn't have climbed out, picked up this dollhouse, somehow thrown it into the crib with her 2-year-old self, and then climbed back in. I assure you that even if she would have been strong enough to do that, if she would have climbed out of that crib, she would have stayed out of that crib. She would not have gone back into it again. So I knew that it was not her. So let me tell you that troubled me more than a little bit when that happened. Shortly after that, I was walking through my son's room in the middle of the night because we had to walk through our son's room to get to our bedroom. And I had been going to the bathroom, and as I walked through the dark room, I saw, and here we go with my 4-year-old son. I have to say that my son and daughter that I'm speaking of were only 11 months apart, which is why I'm saying like one is 4 and then a little bit later, another one's 4. They were very, very close in age. So he was about 4, and I'm just guessing his eyes were wide open in the dark and he looked petrified. And I went over to him and he just looked at me and he said, "Where's Dad's head?" And I said, "What?" And he said, "Where's Dad's head?" And I said, "What do you mean?" He went on to tell me that he saw his dad's head floating around his room with a branch in it. Now, this happened almost 20 years ago, and thankfully it was not a premonition. My husband is still alive and well, and he has not been in any accidents with any branches, thankfully. And, you know, I kind of wrote it off as a dream and an active imagination of a little boy. But in the back of my mind, it troubled me a lot, especially because he was so insistent and he was petrified for the longest time. And he used to call it the dad head. He used to talk about it all the time, the dad head. Well, my son is now 23 years old, and he is adamant that what he saw was not a dream. He was not sleeping, and he actually did see a dad head floating around in his room. Beyond that, everything else that happened in that house wasn't nearly as scary as that. And it saddens me that my son at 4 had to experience something like that. Everything else that happened was just little things, like me lying on my bed and feeling something touch my back, or getting out of the shower and finding a handprint on the steam in the mirror. Getting out of a shower another time, only to find out that someone had let my dog outside while I was in the shower, and the only other one home with me was my 2-year-old, who was asleep in her crib. The last thing that I can remember that happened before we moved out of that house was I woke up one night again to use the bathroom, and I smelled a match, a sulfur smell. And I wanted to make sure that there was nothing burning in the house. A house fire. I wanted to make sure that nothing was wrong. So I went walking through the house smelling this match. Could not find it anywhere. I went down into the basement, into the laundry room, checked everything in the basement because I thought that's where the smell was coming from, but did not find anything down there either. The next morning, I took my children outside to play in the yard to be greeted by 2 detectives who came up to me and informed me that our house had been broken into the night before and by a neighbor kid, and he had broken into our basement and stolen my husband's hunting rifle and held up a diner with it. And then he confessed. And that is the only way that I even knew that they had broken into the house, is because they had confessed to the police and the detectives told me that it happened. And I cannot help but wonder if that match smell may have been related somehow to them going down there. And I can't help but wonder what would have happened if that match smell, which led me down to the basement, if I had been down there at any other time, what would they have done if they had seen me down there in the basement? Was whatever was in the house trying to lead me down to the basement, possibly to put me in harm's way? I don't know, but it's something that I have thought about many, many times. Thankfully, I have to say that I was saved a couple of years later, and there has been no activity, at least not demonic / ghost activity, since I've been saved. Yes, I still experience times of heightened intuition, and yes, I still experience the occasional, I still call it thought transference. It sounds kind of weird, but that's the only thing that I can think of to call it. And so am I saying that no Christians will experience things like this? I'm certainly not going to say that, because I'm sure that they do. But what I'm saying is that I'm thinking that if I did open any sort of gate with that Ouija board, perhaps my salvation closed it. Perhaps God closed it when he saved me. And I am really thankful for that. But getting back to what these things were, that's something that we as Christians, we need to stop being afraid to talk about this. We need to stop being afraid to tell others our experiences. Too many people bottle these things up, and we are not educating ourselves about these things that are very real. Ghosts were mentioned in the Bible. They talked about them in the Bible. So why are we afraid to bring them up and to address the fact that, yes, they are real? Just because they are not the spirits of our dead relatives or dead people in general does not mean that they aren't real. How do I know that they are not the spirits of dead people? Because the Bible tells us over and over again that once you die, you remain dead until you are raised with the resurrection. So there is no relatives haunting you. It is very likely demons who are posing as possibly dead relatives or just dead people in general, trying to deceive people into thinking that that's what they are. What are demons? Well, contrary to what a lot of people believe, demons are not fallen angels. Demons are, in fact, the spirits of dead Nephilim. That's what they are. And I think that a large portion of what we call ghosts, and let's not forget that the Holy Spirit is called the Holy Ghost sometimes. So spirit and ghost are often used interchangeably in the Bible. Now, there may be other entities in the demonic realm that may torment people. The Rephaim are often thought of as giants in the Old Testament, and they certainly were. But if you actually look into the Rephaim, some of them were also known as shades and were also linked to the underworld. So I think it is very possible that there are other spiritual entities that may do what I experienced, may be the culprits for many of these hauntings. So whether it is demons or just something from the demonic realm, that is what they are. They are not dead people. The Bible also speaks of familiar spirits and how we should not try to call them up. We should not try to get their attention. We are supposed to stay far away from this stuff. But I often wonder if possibly my interaction with the Ouija board may have summoned, so to speak, a familiar spirit. I don't know. I think it's a possibility. But at this point, I'm just thankful that I have not experienced anything like that since. As for the intuition and what I still call the thought transference, and what they could possibly be, because not everybody has that. And, you know, they just don't. That's why so many people refuse to believe that it's a possibility, because they haven't experienced it themselves. Same as with, you know, the ghosts, the spirits, whatever you want to call it, that I saw, that I experienced. People don't want to believe it just because it has not happened to them. But it has happened to enough people that we can't be afraid to take a look into it. But going back to the intuition and the thought transference, we need to remember that right now, we are but a shadow of what we were meant to be, of what Adam and Eve were before the fall. So perhaps some of us have vestigial remnants of what once was and what someday we may all have again. I can't be sure of that. And we likely will not know this side of heaven what the answers are to that. But I just really wanted to bring this out into the open, talk about it, because too many people believe that if you are a Christian, there's no way that you can believe in ghosts, because I'm here to tell you that that is not the case. I want to thank you all for listening so much, and I hope you all have a great day.